KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim, in today for Michael Krasny. When pianist Chris Bowers was 22, he won the prestigious Thelonious Monk International Jazz Piano Competition. After his performance, Aretha Franklin came backstage and suggested they work together. Today, Chris Bowers crosses the traditional lines of jazz with hip-hop, and he's worked with Q-Tip and Kanye West. He'll join us in studio for a live performance. That's next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim, in today for Michael Krasny. Pianist Chris Bowers' musical sensibilities began taking shape when he was still in the womb and his parents positioned headphones on his mother's belly. Today, the 25-year-old California native is a rising star, blurring the lines of jazz and hip-hop and other influences. His debut album is Heroes and Misfits on Concord Jazz. Chris Bowers will be performing at the San Jose Jazz Summer Fest tomorrow, and we're honored to have him live in studio for the hour. Chris Bowers, welcome to Forum.
Thank you very much.
So, neither of your parents is a musician, but is it true that they decided before you were born that you were going to play the piano?
Yeah, I have no idea why, but yeah, they decided specifically the piano, yeah.
And it sounds like it ended up being the right instrument
for
you.
Yeah, I guess so. They knew something.
Was there ever any other instrument?
I played sax for about a month in middle school, and then my band director heard me play piano and said not to bring the saxophone anymore and to play piano. So,
did they think you'd be a jazz piano player?
Yeah, I guess so. They put me in classical lessons early on, and I wasn't really practicing. I wasn't really that into it. And so they put me into jazz lessons, and they weren't really jazz fans themselves, but they just figured it would be something for me to do a little bit differently. And I just happened to enjoy that a little bit more.
And so I read that you started out, when you say classical, that you started out with the Suzuki method,
yeah,
which kind of surprised me in terms of listening to your music, because that method is a little is very sort of methodological and a bit rigid, I think, initially to start, because they're just teaching you sort of the very specific basics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. But I think it was really helpful, though, because a lot of things became very natural later, like knowing what I think it developed my pitch and being able to hear notes and know what notes they are and things like that. I think that all came from that method of training.
So if your parents weren't jazz fans, what were they listening to? And what were you listening to growing up?
Yeah. So my parents really only listened to like old school R&B, like Marvin Gaye or Luther Vandross or Stevie or stuff like that. Or my dad's a huge funk fan. So Tower Power and Earth, Wind & Fire. And that's kind of the stuff that I grew up listening to in the house. And then my own listening stuff was a lot of hip hop in the 90s and really bad music that was on the radio and stuff like that. Yeah.
But then who were folks that you sort of settled into as you got older and branched out from your parents' musical tastes?
Yeah. Well, I mean, when I was specifically getting into jazz, like some of the first people were Oscar Peterson, was kind of a huge influence when I first started, and Wynton Kelly, as well as Kenny Kirkland, who played with Wynton Marsalis in the 80s, and Mulgrew Miller and Herbie Hancock and people like that.
And can we hear some of those influences in your new album?
Yeah, I believe so. I think so.
So why don't you play something for us?
Yeah, definitely.
What would you like to play? Tell us a little bit about what you're about to play.
So I'll play a song that's actually from the album called The Protester. And that song was written, it's the first song I wrote for the album, and I named it that because Time Magazine made their Person of the Year The Protester in 2011. And I just thought that was very fitting for what was happening, and that kind of started to shape what the album was going to be about as a whole. Yeah.
Well, here's a protester from Chris Bowers.
Thank you.
Was amazing. There are so many different elements to that song. Talk a little bit about how you kind of came up with all the different elements to it.
Well, one of the things is that I'm really into film scoring, writing music for film and stuff like that. And so I think harmonically and emotionally, a lot of it comes from that. And as far as the hand claps and the percussion and the loop pedal, that's just something I've been messing with to bring something a little bit different, and also to find different ways to play as a solo piano player. Yeah.
It's interesting you say you're really into film scoring, because the music, you can sort of see the story. It tells a story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Thank you. I think our listeners are surprised to know that that was all you. I mean, you sound like an entire band. Talk a little bit about how you're able to accomplish that, and also describe your setup here for us, for folks who can't see you in the studio.
Yeah, well, what I have set up here is just a keyboard and a loop pedal and a microphone. And so what I was doing was I was looping those hand claps with my loop pedal and playing along with that. And then, just playing the piano sound on this keyboard.
Right. So partway through, you stood up to do the hand claps.
Yeah, exactly. Just to get to the microphone. And also, it's easier to feel the rhythm standing up, even though I almost fell down. I don't know if you saw me, but yeah.
And have you heard that before, that you sound like more than one person? I mean, just even the piano playing alone, the way that you were hitting that one key the whole time, still it felt like you had, it sounds like you have multiple hands.
Well, I guess so. Yeah. I just the piano is such an interesting thing, because it's, they call it, you know, it's an orchestra in itself. And so it's really interesting to be able to, create these different sounds, or, you know, different textures, or be playing one texture with one hand and another texture with another hand, and trying to experiment with that.
And, you know, you talked about, I asked you earlier about whether you'd played anything else, and you said you played the sax for like a minute,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So what is it about the piano that you know, really speaks to you?
I think just the sound of it. I think, right now I'm playing a keyboard, but whenever I would play the actual piano, the vibration that the instrument has, I think just really always felt really great to play with. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it has a lot of. And how much have you trained? For how long did you play the piano? When did you start seriously taking lessons?
I started serious lessons when I was about 8. And then I went to an arts high school in Los Angeles and studied there, and studied classical and jazz piano from the time I was 8 up until I finished high school. And then I went to Juilliard for my undergrad and my master's, so obviously I was studying pretty intensely there as well.
And in Juilliard, you studied also film scoring as well?
When I went back for my master's, I took a few film scoring classes and orchestration classes and things like that.
And you also attended the Los Angeles County High School for the Arts.
Yeah.
There was that documentary that came out,
Fame High.
Was that reflective of your experience? I mean, just the intensity that those kids had in terms of what they were focused on.
Yeah, definitely. I think the great thing about my high school is that it really prepared me for something like Juilliard. Like, when I got to Juilliard, I wasn't really that overwhelmed at all, or the idea of learning a bunch of music in a week, or having to do all these performances, or the different kind of pressures of going to Juilliard. I didn't really faze me. It felt normal, since that was what my high school was like.
We're talking with musician and composer Chris Bowers, who got the attention of Aretha Franklin after winning the Thelonious Monk International Jazz Piano Competition at the age of 22. His debut album is Heroes and Misfits on Concord Jazz, and he'll be performing at the San Jose Jazz Summer Fest tomorrow. And Chris, so let's hear something else. I know you've brought you're planning to play a couple of pieces live for us.
Yeah.
So what's the next piece you want to play?
I'll play a piece. Actually, it's a song by the rapper Kendrick Lamar, who's from L.A. as well. And I really love one of these songs of his called Rigor Mortis. And I did a cover of it with a piano where I took the piano and put some stuff on the strings and made it sound like a drum set and looped that and then played along with that. But since I don't have a piano here, I'll just do it with those hand claps again, probably. Yeah.
All right. Your fingers were just flying across the keyboard.
Thank you.
I can see you massaging your hands a little bit. That's a pretty intense song to play.
Huh? Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely. And all the maneuvering and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, can you talk a little bit about, so you won the famous Thelonious Monk International Jazz Piano Competition mm-hmm. in 2011 at the age of 22. Can you just talk about just how big a deal this competition was and what it did for you?
This competition, I mean, actually the year that I won it was the 25th year. So it's been going on for a while. And it started off as just a piano competition. But after a while, they started making it so that every year it changed instruments. And if you look at the past winners, it's pretty much a lot of the who's who in the jazz world, like people like Marcus Roberts or Joshua Redman or Eric Lewis, and all these people that have won have gone on to do really great things. And what it does is there's a cash prize that's involved, but you also get a recording contract. So that's where my album came from.
And Herbie Hancock was one of the judges in that competition. What was it like to be judged by Herbie Hancock?
Definitely pretty intense, especially since I stole a lot from him growing up playing-wise. the judge panel, it was him and Jason Moran, Rini Rosnes, Ellis Marsalis, Danilo Perez. So it was definitely a who's who of jazz piano legends.
So we mentioned that Aretha Franklin, after hearing you, wanted to work with you. Yeah. Talk a little bit about what that was like.
Pretty crazy. That was one of the few times that I've been pretty speechless in a moment. After I finished playing the semifinals, somebody came backstage and said, somebody wants to speak to you. Is that okay? And I said, yeah, sure, sure. So as we're walking to the lobby, they're like, oh, by the way, it's Aretha Franklin you're about to meet. And so I just totally froze up and freaked out. And spoke to her for a while, and she asked for my number, and I figured, you know, she would probably never call me. And then about a week later, she called me herself on the phone and talked to me for a while. And since then, you know, I've played for a few of her birthday parties and Christmas parties and talked to her every once in a while. So it's pretty incredible to have her as a mentor in a lot of ways, for sure.
As a mentor, how has she mentored you? What is something that she's really...
She gave me a lot of advice as far as how to navigate the business side of the music business or music industry. Like, she helped me find a manager in the very beginning and talked to me about a manager versus a publicist and all that kind of stuff, and really advised me on how to navigate that relationship you're supposed to have with your manager, and also talked to me about dealing with record labels and all that kind of stuff. Yeah,
there is so much to learn, even in terms of, you know, the jazz world. I mean, you're 25 years old and you play this sort of, I don't know how to define it, but it's different from sort of the old school jazz. Did you have any difficulty sort of, with breaking into the old jazz world? Did you find folks were really open to your sound or more skeptical?
Definitely a little bit. I grew up playing more traditional jazz, and I started off with that. And I played that mostly in school, especially at Juilliard. So I think it was more the opposite. People that are a little bit more in the traditional jazz space were disappointed that I as far as they're concerned, left them, even though I don't feel that way. But a lot of them feel like what I decided would be my own personal sound isn't traditional jazz. But I definitely, I think I'm rooted in that. So that's still there for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why disappointed? What did it mean to them that you were leaving them?
I think because certain people have in the jazz space have such a specific definition of the music, which is funny to me to begin with. But because they have such a specific definition of it, they feel that it's important for young people to continue that tradition and for young people to continue playing a certain way and talking about the importance of playing a certain way and preserving the music as it existed before. And so I think by changing it and making it something different, they feel like we're losing the tradition, which... yeah, it's just an interesting thought.
And we'll continue our conversation with pianist Chris Bowers, a fast-rising star on the jazz landscape who got the attention of Aretha Franklin and Jay-Z, Kanye West, Q-Tip, and others. Do you have a question for Chris Bowers? Are you a musician or a music lover with a story to share? Join the discussion by giving us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org or post them on our website at kqed.org/forum. We're listening to Vices and Virtues. Am I saying that right?
Yeah.
On your Heroes and Misfits, on Chris Bowers' Heroes and Misfits album. I'm Mina Kim. Stay with us. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're talking with pianist and LA native Chris Bowers, whose debut album is Heroes and Misfits on Concord Jazz. He'll be performing at the 25th anniversary of the San Jose Jazz Summer Fest tomorrow at 10 p.m. That's in downtown San Jose at the Jazz Beyond stage. Let's hear what our listeners have to say. Let's go to Gennaro in Oakland. Hi, Gennaro. Am I saying your name correctly?
Yes, that's great. I just wanted to say to Chris, congratulations. It's really good to see young people making it in the music world.
Oh, thank you.
And, you know, not being afraid of mixing, you know, traditional music with the new upcoming music and changing tradition because, you know, tradition is a word that is used to keep things one way, but it's good to change tradition. And then also I wanted to say to you, Mina, that I love hearing some music on public radio. So please continue musical program.
Thanks, Gennaro.
Thank you so much.
And in addition to being not afraid of mixing traditions, you're also not afraid of having sort of a political message in your work as well.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like all my favorite artists – especially in the past, never shy away from using music to convey a message or to get something across. And I feel like that's the powerful thing about music is that you can really make people think about things a little bit differently or just pose questions for people to ask themselves. And I feel like people like the Beatles or Marvin Gaye or Stevie Wonder or Bob Dylan or people like that are my idols as far as that is concerned. Yeah.
And what sort of inspired you to really look at that interconnection between social justice and art?
I think, well, for my first album, I was trying to figure out what I wanted to say with it, which, you know, as a young artist is kind of daunting. But I knew from the very beginning that I didn't want it to be, the album isn't, if you listen to it, it's not, you know, look at me play piano and check me out and all kind of stuff, just because I feel like, especially in the jazz space, we kind of get so focused on the technicality and the acrobatic abilities that different musicians have. And we get so caught up with that we forget about messages and emotion and the importance of how you can make people feel a certain way with music. And so that was kind of the focus of it. And as far as the political side, it's more so just almost asking myself and kind of challenging myself to look at those things and to be more aware and I feel like a lot of the songs on the album are kind of challenges to myself to be able to, you know, if I make an album that's a political album or make an album or song that has to do with politics or things like that, somebody's going to ask me about that. And I have to form an opinion and really be aware. And I think by doing that, it kind of forced me to start thinking that way.
Does your song Hope directly relate to that about Barack Obama's presidential campaign?
Yeah, definitely. I wrote that when he was during his whole campaign, and being that that was my first time voting, it was kind of an interesting and really special moment to be a part of. And I just remember watching that and really getting caught up with the idea behind it and the idea behind what he represented and what he represents and the excitement of possibility of just different things starting to change and public consciousness beginning to change. And so, yeah, that's what that song is about. And, yeah, it was just a very special time, I think, for all of us, but especially the younger generation that voted for him for the first time voting.
Can we hear it?
Yeah, for sure.
Really beautiful, Chris. It's like a ballad. Do you like doing ballads?
Yeah. I've always been actually more drawn to ballads, especially in the jazz repertoire, than more up-tempo songs. Yeah.
What is it about them?
I'm a sucker for romance and emotion, and I think so for some reason I really feel like with ballad you can feel the emotion behind songs and the emotion behind pieces of music, and I think that's always connected with me.
Ben writes, I really enjoy your sound. You've obviously worked on it and evolved it. I was wondering how you challenge and push yourself while still remaining authentic to who you are.
Oh, yeah. That's a good question. I mean, ultimately, I look at my where I want to be and my idols, and I am very far away from both of those goals. And so I've just been trying to keep pushing towards that. And I feel like every time I reach a goal that I've maybe set previously, by the time I get to that goal, I already have 10 more goals that I'm trying to reach. So I never feel like I'm quite catching up.
Joaquin writes, just wanted to say I caught Chris Bowers playing with Jose James at the Kumwa last year, and it was an amazing show. Amazing,
oh,
in all caps.
That's awesome. Yeah, it was fun.
I've been listening to Jose James for years, but I was blown away by the prowess of Chris on keys, along with Richard Spavin on drums. Am I saying his last name?
Yeah, right? Yeah, that's right.
Takuya Kuroda on trumpet and Solomon Dorsey on bass. Such a treat to hear these young lions perform. Looking forward for more to come.
Awesome.
And let's go to your calls. Let's go to Kelly in Richmond. Hi, Kelly.
Oh, hi. Good morning, Chris. Thank you.
Thank you.
First of all, I want to tell you I'm at work and my soul was just soothed. That was beautiful. That was called Hope.
Yeah, Hope.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that was beautiful. But what I wanted to say is that I have a nephew that is close in age to you.
Mm-hmm.
I feel he's truly gifted. He graduated from college here in the Bay Area with a degree in music. He plays the piano. He moved to L.A. He wanted to be, you know, L.A., one of the entertainment capitals.
Mm-hmm.
And what kind of advice can you give him just for trying to get into the industry and stay in focus? He's been in L.A. now for a year and a half, and I think he's very talented.
Yeah. Definitely not getting discouraged at all. I feel like living in a city like L.A. or New York, or like you said, one of the big capitals, it's very easy to get discouraged if things aren't coming together, or if you have a couple of really slow months like we've all had in this industry. But I think, just staying positive, because I'm a big believer of putting things in the universe and them coming to you, and also just being a good person, which I'm sure he is. I feel like that's very important.
He's a wonderful young man.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah, definitely.
Thanks, Kelly, for the call.
Yeah, thank you.
We're talking with Chris Bowers, a fast-rising star on the jazz landscape who got the attention of Aretha Franklin and Jay-Z and Kanye West and Q-Tip and so many others, and clearly the attention of our listeners. Do you have a question for Chris Bowers? Give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org or post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. This album has been described as really ambitious, and I wanted to know just how it stretched you, where it really pushed you.
I think it pushed me to figure out what my voice was going to be or is as an artist, which I feel like is an interesting journey, because I didn't want to, like I was saying before, I didn't want to release an album that was traditionally jazz or, play standards or have a trio album and all that. I feel like, that's one thing that, nothing against that. I just felt like for me, I wanted my first album to very clearly say that this is the type of music that I like to create. This is the type of music that I'm into, and really try to, fuse those things. So it was kind of a challenge to try to figure out how to, include all of my influences without, track by track playing a jazz standard, then playing some hip hop song and then playing some indie rock song and trying to figure out how to fuse all those things into my own compositions.
Yeah. And besides, even in this album, in your film scoring, you've done film scoring for films like, I understand you did Seeds of Time, which was actually a documentary about genetic engineering and preserving natural seeds. Was the subject of the film really important to you when you decided to do this film scoring project?
I was very fortunate to be, they were looking for a composer and they were looking at a few different people, and they asked me to send some music, and the director seemed to be very pleased with how I approached the film. It just was great that it also happened to be a film about something that was very interesting to me as far as the subject matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the other subject matter that was really interesting to you was the Arab Spring, right?
Yeah, exactly. When I first started writing for this album, it was around the same time that whole Arab Spring thing was happening, especially in the beginning of 2011 and that whole year, and as well as things like the Trayvon Martin case the year later, or Occupy Wall Street, and different things that I just felt like it was my generation finally speaking out and trying to find the power of its voice and find out how it could change things that it wasn't happy with that voice. So I feel like it was kind of the beginning of all of that. And I think it's just continuing and growing even more now.
Yeah, you mentioned your generation in a couple of the descriptions of some of your songs. You know, is it important to you sort of how your generation, what your generation does, but also how your generation is understood?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's going to happen. I think a lot of people are understanding the generation. I think that we have this this in-between. Obviously, there are a lot of people that think that my generation has the potential to be this incredibly powerful generation and to make really huge shifts and things like that. But then also there's the other side where we're really self-involved and self-absorbed. And I feel like, and we all have ADD, it seems like. And I feel like it's there's a really an interesting balance that has to happen in order for us to realize that potential we have and take advantage of that rather than going the other way and getting into ourselves and kind of not really caring about anything else.
Yeah, it's interesting. We're going to hear actually Forever Spring in a moment, right? You were planning to play that for us. You know, so spring, it's sort of interesting. Does spring sort of encapsulate what you're talking about, where you feel like your generation is on this like cusp of sort of showing itself to be one of these things or the other?
Yeah, exactly. Which I liked that idea of that moment of growth always happening and that moment of going from something that like a time that was very dark or a time that was a lot colder to this growing and this warmth and this discovery and all that. And I feel like that represents what's happening with my generation at the moment.
Well, let's hear Forever Spring.
Yeah. Thank you.
And you were listening to my guest, 25-year-old Chris Bowers, and that song was Forever Spring from his debut album, Heroes and Misfits. He'll also be performing at the 25th anniversary of the San Jose Jazz Summer Fest tomorrow in downtown San Jose at 10 p.m. at the Jazz Beyond stage. That was incredible.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
And let's go to more of your calls. Let's go to Pam in Fairfield. Hi, Pam.
Hi.
Go ahead, please.
I'm calling to see if you can tell me how to inspire my gifted grandson. He took lessons from kindergarten through junior high, and he was motivated most of the time, but he just kept on getting the usual classics over and over. Mm-hmm. You know, so much Ride of the Valkyries is all you can do. And he's given it up, and no amount of convincing, cajoling, offering money, anything. It's been 2 years. He's 16 now, and how can we change his mind?
Getting a lot of calls about inspiring.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like he has to find, you know, maybe an entry point with the style of music that he's into, maybe. I feel like for me, what helped when I wasn't really inspired was when I discovered the fact that by playing piano, I could figure out songs from the radio and I could figure out some of my favorite songs to play, especially at that age, because you can be the cool kid at school if you can play certain songs on the piano. And so by doing that, I feel like you only are going to work really hard on the things that you're into. And I feel like if he finds something that he connects with, that he can do with the piano, then that will inspire him to get back with it and then maybe start to check out some of those other things again, some of the more classical pieces.
Well, I'm going to insist that he listen to you.
No, oh, thank you so much.
That inspires me, but I can't play the piano. So thank you so much.
Pam, thanks for the call. You know, you've been described as redefining jazz. And I wonder if you could just talk a little bit about your technique. I mean, we've been just hearing some incredible things, and I think for a lot of people, sort of a new sound from the piano. Can you talk a little bit about
it? Yeah. I think, I don't know. I feel like as far as my technique goes, I again, like studied jazz pretty heavily and pretty intensely throughout high school and college and stuff. And so I did a lot of transcribing of people like Wynton Kelly and Herbie Hancock and Keith Jarrett and Brad Meldow and a lot of the great jazz pianists, Mulgrew Miller. And so I think as far as my technique, it all stems from that, as well as my training in classical music. And then I've just been trying to figure out how to use those techniques to, instead of playing that music specifically, translate that to my own stuff, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. In terms of how you play the instrument, mm-hmm. You know, how you actually touch the keys and hit the keys and sort of that aspect of things.
Yeah. Well, I'm actually always inspired by, that's where I'm most inspired by classical music and classical piano players. I feel like they get the best sound out of the instrument. And I feel like even my favorite jazz musicians that I love the way that they play and their touch, they are also really competent classical musicians like Herbie or Keith Jarrett. And so I feel like that's really incredibly important for me right now is going back to really studying classical music. I wish I had taken it more seriously when I was younger.
Interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then also just, you know, the samples you use, the loops. Can you talk a little bit about how that figures into everything as well? How you...
Yeah. That's just...
How you feel that.
It's a sound that I'm really interested in right now, and I feel like a lot of my favorite young artists have found interesting ways to use loops. And this female vocalist named Julia Easterlin, who's on my album, mm-hmm. she does a lot of looping, and a friend of mine named Moses Sumney from L.A. And I think it's interesting to have just one person's perspective of every aspect of music, rhythm and harmony and melody and all that, and have all that be layered. It's just an interesting sound when you have one person's idea of how each part of a song should be played or presented. Yeah.
And what's next for you? Do you want to do more film scoring? Do you want to do or really establish yourself, you know, on the music landscape?
Yeah, a bit
as
of
a
both.
Performer?
Yeah, I'm actually working on a documentary right now that I'm about to start scoring that I don't know if I'm allowed to say what it's about, but it'll be on Showtime in the fall. So I'm working on that. And then... just trying to start touring a bit more with this album and start thinking about the next one. Yeah.
And, you know, we're going to go out with you. Before we do, I just want to ask you, are you comfortable with being seen as somebody who's redefining modern jazz? Is that something that you think is an accurate
I feel like yes and no. I feel like I don't want to take that title because, again, that causes animosity with traditionalists in the jazz world. I feel like if people want to call my music jazz or associate me with jazz, then first of all, I think then they get it because obviously that's what it is. I feel like it's kind of odd to not call it jazz because that's where it stems from. But then at the same time, you know, the word jazz is a very vague and elusive word. So I don't really know if that is necessarily a great thing either, because it's just hard to describe music with just a word. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what will you take us out with?
I'll play a jazz standard. I'll play a song called Skylark.
You're listening to Chris Bowers. His debut album is Heroes and Misfits on Concord Jazz. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, Tina Lauerberg, and Susan Britton. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. I'm Mina Kim. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.